Hi, this is Carrie with the Promised Podcast, and today I'm going to share a little bit about my story with narcissistic abuse and what finally led me to that place of moving on from the relationship. And in my case, it was a marriage. But I work with a lot of women who struggle with reaching the point of no return, coming to that place where they're not going to reopen the door to the narcissistic abuser again. And so people ask me, what was that breaking point for you? When did you finally reach that point of, I'm not going back to this again. I'm not allowing this back into my life again. And I don't think there is a definitive answer to that question for anyone in a narcissistic relationship. However, I think it is more like a series of events that happens, and it wears on you over time to get to that place. And I don't even think that there's necessarily a final straw. I think it's with a narcissistic abuser, it's very different. It's not a conventional relationship where you're kind of contemplating and you go through different kinds of feelings and emotions. With narcissistic abuse, you're dealing with a volcano of emotions and things building up inside of you that you have to sort through. You have to eventually let everything overflow and calm and cool before you can actually even begin to sort through what's taken place in the relationship, the patterns of abuse, the manipulation, the confusion. So there's a whole lot of elements involved in narcissistic abuse that are not present in a conventional relationship. So I want to address some of those things in this podcast because I think they're really important to help people, especially women who tend to be more victims and survivors of narcissistic abuse, to understand what they're going through and begin the process of healing and recovering from a narcissistic relationship. So I'm going to start by sharing some of the things that happened in my story, because I think that sharing some of that, which I haven't shared a whole lot about, will help bring some more clarity and understanding around this issue for women who are in this situation, and also will help bring some awareness to others who might not really understand what a narcissistic relationship is like. So the first thing I'm going to share is that when I first got into the relationship with the abuser, my ex-husband, he was very polite. I remember on our first date, he held my hands in his hands and he looked me right in the eyes and he said, I could never hurt someone that I love intentionally. That was like very clear. I remember it like it was yesterday. I would never, ever, he actually said this, I couldn't imagine hurting someone I love intentionally. So hold on to that thought for a minute, because that is going to explain the next series of events that took place, which I'm not going to share all with you. But what happened after that was he helped to develop this level of trust in me where I believed in him. I believed in the things that he would say to me, the promises he would make, the way that he would talk about how he loved me, how loyal he is as a person, How he's never been a cheater. He would never cheat. He could never do something to betray my trust. And this went on for several months. And anytime there was an issue that came up, we seemed to be able to work through it and get past it. And then the continued consistent words of affirmation and future faking and promises went on. And so I thought, well, this is going to be good if this can maintain itself throughout the course of the future of our relationship. And as time went on, it was doing that. But like most narcissistic abusers, he had this, a lot of doctors and therapists might refer to it as like a sob story, where something happened to him when he was younger. And they use this as a crutch. They use it as a scapegoat. And they use it throughout the course of the relationship to maintain control and to manipulate the person into allowing their abusive behavior. So for my ex, he had a brain injury when he was younger. And he also had another childhood trauma that took place, which I won't share publicly. But these traumas and the brain injury specifically was what he used as a scapegoat for all of his bad behavior. Now, for the first 6 months of our relationship, I never saw an explosive episode from him. There was no rage present. There was no anger or hostility that seemed to be an issue. In fact, during the months that he was pursuing me, he would often say things like, "I just want to have a chill life. I don't like drama." And so I thought I was essentially getting into a relationship with someone who was calm and collected and was very forward and direct and knew what he wanted and was confident in himself. And I didn't see any kind of insecurity issues or anything like that. So you can see how deceptive this can be for someone entering into a relationship with someone like this, not knowing what's to come. So before we got married, he ended up having episodes that were, I would define as explosive. And after those major episodes, he was just hysterically crying, seemingly remorseful for his actions and behavior, and made promises that it would never happen again, that he was just overwhelmed by the love that he has for me and all of the newness of the relationship, something that he's never felt before, that it's the most real thing he's ever experienced. And so it's just been overwhelming for him. And that was the gist of why he felt this way. And he twisted that around and was like, "No, I'm going to marry you and I am going to be a good husband to you. I know that I'm what you need in life. I know that I can be and I want to be everything." And I remember I saved these beautiful text messages that he would send to me during this time after we were engaged. And he would just say things like, "I am so incredibly blessed to have you. You are everything I need. You are the best partner I could have asked for or dreamt of. And we are just going to have the best marriage." Like 40 years, that was our thing. Like, we're going to have the next 40 years together be the best 40 years of our life. Like, that that was something that he said often. And so it gave me this hope. I thought, okay, well, he's genuinely committed to the good. And he would say that a lot too. I really need things to be good with you. So I was doing everything in my power to partner with him in that, to make sure that we were doing what we could to save money, doing what we could to get things in order and stay consistent with our plans. And after we got married, on our honeymoon, on my actual birthday, so this was a few days after we got married, all of a sudden, we got into an argument and he started saying things like, I can't handle this. I'm sick of dealing with your illness because I have an autoimmune condition. I'm sick of hearing about your health. I'm sick of this. I'm sick of that. And he was just spewing all of these hateful words out at me. And I was like, oh my gosh, like we are on our honeymoon and you're telling me this? Like these are words of someone that doesn't want to be with me, that just got married to me. These are words coming from someone who just gave a speech on our wedding day in front of over 50 people about how dedicated he is to sharing a life with me and my children. And now he's saying that he doesn't want to deal with these things and that he's sick of this. Literally within days after exchanging vows with this person, these are the things that I was hearing come out of his mouth. I was terrified. I was like, what have I gotten myself into? Because I thought I was with somebody who couldn't imagine ever intentionally hurting someone that he loves. I thought I had married someone who was fully devoted to a lifelong future with me and loved me unlike anything he's ever felt in his life. And now everything has just been flipped upside down. You can imagine, I'm sure, how heartbreaking this would be for someone who was sharing the same experiences with this person of a love they've never felt before and desire to share the rest of their life with this person and having it be completely torn down within a matter of days after getting married. And literally over absolutely nothing that would warrant behavior like that. So one of the classic traits of a narcissist is their reactions to events not matching up, meaning their reaction is so over the top for what the circumstance called for. So you get into like a small argument that could easily be discussed and worked out, and they just go off the deep end. That is very common with a narcissist, and a narcissistic abuser does this all the time. So it's like the punishment doesn't fit the crime, so to speak. And this is exactly what took place throughout the rest of our marriage. It was these extreme reactions to things that normal relationships go through, you know, normal people to conflicts and challenges that healthy, normal relationships go through. And even to the point where, like, if I hadn't let him know that I was making dinner before a certain time, I was called lazy, and I was just verbally and emotionally torn apart, ripped to shreds over something as simple as that. So it was always this grandiose excuses of why he was entitled to react in such a horrendous emotional way towards me and towards all of our children. So because of how explosive and because of how emotional they get in their reactions to things, the way that they describe events and stuff to other people, it actually makes it sound really convincing. Because if you think about it, it's like putting on a show. You're putting on an act for other people to make yourself more believable to them. So he would do this to his kids and make it sound like I was the one causing him to behave this way. And he would make these huge scenes, drag them into conversations with us, pull them in to text messages. And you have to be really careful because the narcissist can drag you into the same behavior as what he's doing. And then it becomes kind of like this toxic cycle between the two of you. It's kind of like that saying, you are what you hang out with. You do begin taking on some of those traits and begin kind of modeling some of their behaviors because that's what you're around all the time. And I found myself doing that. And it wasn't often, but when I did, I was ashamed and I was humiliated. And I couldn't believe that I was behaving that way because it wasn't who I was. And that was not my normal character. So you have to be really cautious of that because that is really where they want you. They want to be able to have that much control over you to where they can point the finger back at you. I mean, they almost coerce you into reacting like them and to gaslighting you to a degree where you are reacting more to just convince everyone that you're not going crazy, because the things that they do and say to gaslight you make you feel like you're going insane. And they'll deny things that they did, they'll lie about things that they said, and they'll minimize their behavior and just try and flip it back on you as much as they possibly can, because they don't want to have accountability. They don't want to take responsibility for their own heinous acts. They want someone else to be responsible. And you, in the narcissistic relationship, the victim is going to be that person. I had to learn to maintain self-control as much as I possibly could throughout the course of the relationship. And this required me to live separately from my ex-husband, which was a choice that I made. And I did not want myself and my kids being chronically exposed to this negative behavior unless he was going to commit to getting help. And I remember before we moved back in together the last time, he claimed to have had some epiphany. He started watching Dr. Jordan Peterson and some other philosophers. And I believe he's a philosopher and a psychologist, but he was listening to a lot of different people who he said helped him understand things on a deeper level, and a lot of things that I had been trying to show him and help him understand and teach him. So he was giving me this credit and this acknowledgement I'd never had before from him. And I started believing in him again. Once again, he wanted to work on the marriage. He wanted to stay committed and rectify some of the wrongs. And a lot of those wrongs having to do with being unfaithful to me. He had a serious problem with social media. And actually, anytime we would disconnect, I would cut off communication from him and try and go no contact. He would go back on social media and scout for other women. And he would befriend a bunch of single girls on social media and have conversations with them and God knows what else. But these were the types of affairs that he was having that I am aware of. I'm sure there's more that I'm not. And so he had started to apologize for all of this unfaithful behavior. He wanted to recommit to the marriage. He planned this whole beach date where he took this paper that apparently wasn't even real and burnt it and said, this is the paper that I filed to cancel our divorce that I filed, you know, against you. And I'm never going to file for divorce again. If you want to divorce me, you're going to have to be the one to do it. I'm not going to do it. I'm recommitting myself to this marriage. I love you. It's only you. We'll always only be you. All of these promising words and more of the same future faking, lies, and manipulation. So I fell into it. It was romantic. I loved this man. He was recommitting everything to me and wanting to do things differently. And so I was on board with him and committed to that with him and did pretty much everything that he'd asked of me moving forward. And it still wasn't enough to stop him from abusing me. He even sent our pastor a text saying, I appreciate Carrie in a whole new way. I feel so ashamed of the way that I treated her. I've treated her in our marriage. And I'm different now. Things have changed. I feel like I've had a revelation. I have learned so much. And he even told me, I know I will never hurt you again. I know that I will not hurt you again. And I believed it. And I always ask myself, like, does he remember telling me those things? Because it just is mind-blowing to think that someone can say the things that they do and go through all of these acts of learning and texting people and, you know, like the date on the beach and recommitting your life to someone, how someone can do that and then go back to the same abusive cycle and the same abusive behaviors and worse following that. And there's a scripture in the Bible that says that a man who knows the way and learns the truth of God and the word, and then walks away from it, is worse off than they were before. And I think this really embodies what the narcissist core is. This constant walking away. Walking away from the truth, walking away from themselves, and ultimately walking away from God. So to continue on with my story,
I honestly could never share publicly all of the things that he said and did to abuse me, because it's really horrible. And you don't realize how bad it is, because as I shared in a recent YouTube video, you become desensitized to the abuse over a period of time. You become desensitized because they're constantly minimizing what they do. They're constantly invalidating you, gaslighting you, convincing you it wasn't as bad as it was, that you're overreacting, that you're not seeing things clearly, that you're the one with the problems, the mental issues, all of it. So over time, you become desensitized and you start believing a lot of their lies. And that's what makes it so difficult to break free from these relationships. And it wasn't until the last time I left the relationship that I committed to therapy, which I'm still in, and learning how to be completely honest with myself and what took place in that marriage. And if you're going to be really, really honest with yourself, that person is so incapable of really genuinely loving another human being. They are so manipulative. They are so coercive and deceptive and contemptuous in their heart that every single relationship that they have is self-serving to them in some way, shape, or form. It is not outside of themselves. It has everything to do with what they feel entitled to do and how it makes them feel, how it makes them look, and what they gain from it. Whatever it is, power, control, status, whatever it is that they are gaining from that, that is the sole purpose of every single relationship that they have. I do believe that they can develop attachments. That's it. I'm not talking about love here. And when they develop these kinds of attachments, now, like I said, this is not love. They can become obsessed with that person. They can become obsessed with the relationship and the feelings that they had with that person. But it's not love. It's an attachment. It's a very strong attachment that they develop with that person. And the only way for a narcissistic abuser in particular, and I don't know if there's a way with someone who has antisocial personality disorder, but somebody with NPD, somebody with severe narcissism, the only way for them to change, the only way for them to even begin to learn how to authentically, genuinely love another human being is to go through intensive, long-term psychotherapy. And the reason why most of them will not go through this, and I want us to get used to not to stop saying can't, okay? Because they actually can. They're very intelligent people, actually. They're actually very emotionally intelligent as well. as emotionally immature as they come off, they're actually very emotionally not mature. I wouldn't say that, but they're emotionally intelligent because they learn and feed off of the emotions of others. And that's how they're able to control and manipulate people. So they are capable. They do know. And if they are willing, and that's the key. And I remember a friend saying this to me a long time ago. He said, you have to be able and you have to be willing when it comes to change. And if you're able, which they are in most cases, and if they're willing, then it is possible. But a lot of them are not. They won't. And they won't and they don't commit to that because the way that they are has worked out extremely well for them throughout their entire lives. The way that they're able to control and manipulate people has been of benefit to them. There's no reason for them to change. Even as strong as their attachment is to you, it's not love. So it will never give them purpose in their entitled mind to change their behavior. And if a narcissist is listening to this right now, they're going to laugh. Because they don't believe in this. It's what Dr. David Hawkins says from the Marriage Recovery Center. They're in denial. And he uses an acronym for that that says, don't even know I am lying to myself. And that's the truth. They are so lost in deception that they can't even see the truth. They don't want to. So I shouldn't say can't, because the truth is they don't want to. There's no reason for them to. In most cases, a lot of these types of men will only respond to consequences. And even in the consequences, they're still justifying and making excuses. If you visit, and this is an extreme situation, but not far from what a lot of these types of men are capable of. If you talk to someone who murdered somebody in prison, he's got antisocial personality disorder, which a lot of them do in prison, who were capable of, you know, committing murder and trying to justify it, make excuses for it. You can interview them and they will say to you, still, after they were convicted for murder, they will tell you that she deserved it. She wouldn't shut up. She attacked me. Whatever the reason is. That's the thing. That's how dangerous these types of people are. My ex-husband would make jokes about killing me. He would laugh knowing that I have a heart condition, knowing that I easily startle. He would actually laugh about scaring me to death. Not just a few times. This happened often to the point I would cry. I had never been so badly scared by another human being ever in my life. And he treated me that way. That's just one example. So if a man is capable, and I know a lot of women listening to this right now have experienced similar abuse. If a man is capable of that, he is capable of anything. If he can do something like that to somebody he claims to love and laugh about it, and make jokes about how if you died of a heart attack because he scared you to death, no one would ever know. That's what he said to me. I would never tell anyone. That's what he said. If he's capable of something like that, he is capable of anything. He would even laugh about giving his own dad a heart attack when he was younger. To me and my children, something my children still remember and bring up to me, that he was that awful to actually joke and laugh about having gave his dad a heart attack. I cannot stress enough to women how dangerous these relationships are. How dangerous, and the consequences you will have to face remaining in a relationship with a narcissistic abuser. The damage that it's not only going to do to you physically, emotionally, and spiritually, but the damage that it's also going to do to your children. So women who stay in these relationships or marriages because of financial reasons or because of their kids, because of the kids, you've got it backwards, honey. You've got it backwards. You should be fleeing. What does God say? Flee from sin. Flee. This is a sinful person. He lives in deliberate sin. You should be fleeing, you and your children, from this relationship. So, what did it take for me is the question I get often. Well, what it shouldn't have to take, and what it took for me was that the thought of staying married to someone who hated me, because that's the truth. That's the truth. Staying married to someone who hated me made me want to die. And I thought, if staying with him causes me to feel so low about myself, so low about everything, I became debilitated in a way that I could not be the mother to my kids that they needed me to be. I was stripped of everything, my identity, my purpose, my motherhood, all of it was taken from me. And women who've been in this situation, who are in this situation, who are listening to this right now, know exactly what I'm talking about. And you could be right there right now in that spot. And a couple of people said to me, I knew someone who was in a relationship with someone like your husband, and she killed herself. And that was honestly where I was headed. I didn't want to live in this marriage anymore. I couldn't. I simply couldn't bear it. And I didn't want to live without him either. And that was what woke me up. Because my kids, your children, the gifts God has given you, you are responsible for. God has laid that responsibility on you. And to just completely walk away from that and abandon that, it's more selfish than you realize. And I told myself, in the most broken state I've ever been in my life, I told myself, you have a long way to recovery. You have a long way to wellness again. But you have to get up. You have to get up and keep going and get stronger and not look back. And you have to do it first for yourself, because you are worthy of that. And I don't care what any man says. The one true living God proved that. He didn't have to say it. He showed it to you by going to the cross. That's what you're worth. He came to embody and teach what your value is in Christ. He came to teach and show you what the embodiment of a bride-Christ relationship is in marriage. Your husband should be willing to go and be crucified on a cross for you. Not the other way around. The roles are not the same. His love and sacrifice to you as a husband is not dependent on your character. The word does not teach that. It doesn't. In fact, it even states that if he is acting as a non-believer and unwilling to live with you in an understanding way, then he is a non-believer walking away. He's considered a non-believer. He shows that not by his words, not by his ministry at the church or whatever he's doing there. He's showing that by his behavior to you as a husband. And the word says, for how are you to know, husband or wife, if he or she is actually saved? For how are you to know? This is in the word. For I have called you to live in peace. Okay, so if he's acting as a non-believer because he's simply unwilling to live with you, unwilling, rejecting you, threatening to divorce you, threatening to throw you out of the house, threatening. That's somebody who is unwilling. He is not a believer. And I know many pastors who would agree with me on this, who do not believe that a man who abuses his wife can possibly be a believer. It's not possible. It's not. He is being led by the enemy. That's what I had to come to realize. This man is not being led by God. He's rejected God. He is led by the enemy to the point he has mistreated and abused me so badly that I don't want to live. Love gives life. It's not love. It's not love what he's doing. Love gives life. Love is life-giving. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is gentle. Love is not self-seeking. It does not easily anger. Love is not the way that you're being treated. It's hate. That's what I had to learn. And to deny the responsibility that God had entrusted me with to mother and teach my children in his truth would be to deny and reject him. As much as you love the narcissistic abuser, it'll never change him. Not even the love of God can change him unless he's willing. And that's the problem. He's not. I hope that this is helpful for you, and I hope that this encourages you or anyone who's listening that is in a situation like this or knows someone who is to become more educated on narcissistic abuse. Continue to educate yourself. Continue to reach out for support and get the resources that you need to be safe, to stay safe, to get out of the relationship, to protect yourself and your kids, and learn to live in freedom and truth and not look back. You can find more of my services and resources on www.promisedcoaching.com. And you can also find me on my YouTube channel at Carrie Naw. God bless.